You're listening to Blues and Roots Radio Album of the Week on bluesandrootsradio.com and bluesandrootsradio.com.au.
The world was spinning, I was in it, but it felt like the earth was flat. And so I sent out my heart on a satellite, and it brought you back. And we were laid years apart, but now you're in.
David Leask is originally from Jedburgh in Scotland. He now calls Mississauga, which is in Ontario, on Lake Ontario in Canada, his home. He's a powerful performing songwriter who's built an artistic bridge between the influence of his birthplace and the fresh possibilities of his adopted Canadian home. He's produced 4 critically acclaimed CDs and numerous international songwriting awards in different genres. Songwriters magazine called David the most consistent Canadian songwriting competition winner, and he was also awarded the Mississauga Established Performing Artist of the Year Award. He's released a brand new album. It's a live album, live off the floor, called The Clark Hall Sessions. The Clark Hall is in Port Credit, which is part of Mississauga, and I sat with David in Port Credit itself, and we had a chat about the making of the album. I've got David Leask here, and he's just released a brand new album called The Clark Hall Sessions. And Clark Hall is actually in Port Credit in Ontario, where we both, the area that we both live in. Dave, I'm going to start off by asking you, you know, your roots are from Scotland. You're a Jedburgh lad, and you've been here for quite a number of years. Can you tell us about the journey from Scotland to where you are now here in Canada?
You want me to sum up 24 years? The journey, I mean, I came here the end of 91 and basically just kind of dove into music and kind of got to know the scene and started writing songs. I guess the transition from Scotland to Canada is one that stirs a lot of things up. It's not a new story, the immigrant story, but it's one that stirred a lot of songs that sort of has contributed in some way, I guess, to all of my records, in terms of the material. And I've just sort of managed to embed myself in the scene here and stay alive and keep playing music.
Your background, your brother had a bar down in the Hoyk area, and you pretty much grew up learning your chops at different sessions that were going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's another chapter prior to that. I mean, I played in a band with guys down in Newcastle, and that was my weekend. I would go to a foreign country and go down to England every weekend, where people would think I had a strange accent, and down in Geordieland. But I learned a lot of chops through my pal Graham Thompson, and he and I put out a couple of releases there. But then when my brothers, they had a couple of bars, there was always live music in the number 10 bar in Hoyk, and I was always handy with my guitar, so the bands that would be coming through, I'd be always open to get up and jam with them. So I got to know a lot of musicians in the scene, and even travelling musicians that were coming through. So it was a great thing for me. I mean, I never wanted to lose music. I mean, I had a full-time job outside of music then, so I always found a way to keep my hand and my eyes and my ears in music and playing, because I guess it was always meant to be that I would go on and keep doing it and do it full-time.
And it, obviously great experience for you to be open to many genres at such a young age.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the... I mean, growing up, I never really thought about genres. You know, you'd be a sponge for whatever came at you, right from, you know, learning Wild Mountain Time in your mum and dad's living room, you know, as they go around a circle, or whatever the song was that the singer would get up and sing, you'd kind of learn it. And, you know, it's all melodies and it's all rhythms and time signatures, and, you know, from Celtic music to rock music to funk music. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I was playing Kool and the Gang stuff down with that band. I mean, we were doing ZZ Top, you name it. I mean, all these things are just this melting pot. But the Celtic melodies is something that's... I get people make comments when I when I sing and when I play, maybe even take a lead solo, that there's something sort of almost sort of Stuart Adamson, bagpipe, Celtic-like in what I do. Yeah. And that's another guy that was a big influence on me.
From watching you live, you've got this signature, I would call it a signature sound, you know, it's a David Leask sound, you know, it's you when you're playing, but it is that Celtic soul thing that you've developed over the years and you've honed your skill.
You know, I just try and be myself. I mean, I believe that that's what we're meant to do in the short time span we have here on Earth, is just to kind of not follow one genre, but just to try and learn. You know, I don't want to be a genre. I want to be myself.
Yeah.
So,
you hadn't released many albums in the last 7 or 8 years. Last year, you released a fantastic album, studio album, and you followed that up quickly with this brand new album, which is Alive, off the floor, right here in Port Credit at Clark Hall, Clark Hall Sessions. Can you just tell us a little bit the significance behind Clark Hall itself?
Well, I'll tell you how it happened, and it was unplanned. I mean, that's the magic thing about it, is we rented the hall. I really didn't know what I was going to do with the hall. I just wanted to try something, and so I decided I would try and shoot some videos, get some videos to show what I can do live with my side players. I have great side players, Justin Abedin on electric guitar and Sean O'Connor on flutes and whistles. So I didn't even have a videographer till 5 days before, but we got a guy and he turned up on the day, and we basically, you know, me and my ambitiousness, I set out to record 16 songs in a matter of a couple of hours, which meant that we had to just go one song after the other. And pretty much every song on the record is one take, apart from one song where I forgot the lyrics. So we recorded all this stuff, you know, and again, I didn't decide what songs till almost the night before or the morning off, and I just wrote a bunch down, and I did 7 with Justin and I, and I did 5 with Sean, and I got Justin in on a couple of the ones with Sean, and we just ran with it. And then when we listened back, you know, it was it sounded really good, and it was just a real magic vibe in that hall. I mean, it's almost a century old hall. There's been a lot of music playing in it. But the other significance is that my wife, who was there, she would not be here and I would not be here, because that's where her parents met while my wife's mother was singing at the age of 17 in a singing contest. So there's just this magic thinking that, you know, that was 72 years ago. Ruth Beatty was up there singing, and then 72 years later, you know, here we are making music in the same hall. And there was definitely some magic happened, and I think it's maybe partly ghosts, partly the management of the live nature of that hall, because, you know, you're managing acoustics that are quite live. And I had Dave Vanderplug, a great engineer, who captured some of the stuff with stereo mics as well as our direct signals. And when we listen back, you know, there's just a rawness, and it's almost like the hall was another player, and that's the way that I looked at it. And so, you know, we didn't go in to do a record, we went to do video content, and we came out, basically, we put 12 songs out on the record.
That's amazing. The other thing is that tie in with your mother-in-law having the connection with the hall, Mary Ellen actually has co-written songs that have actually appeared on the album as well.
That's true. She's co-written a couple on this record.
Yeah.
Stronger in Broken Places and Ancestors' Eyes.
Yeah, so that, that ties it all in as well.
There you go.
Amazing stuff. Well, I was going to ask you, the team that you have together, obviously to do something like this, you need guys that you can trust and that you've played with and that know how you work. And the likes of Dave Vanderplug, who is an amazing sound guy.
Yeah.
Was that, well, you're saying that you hadn't planned on doing the record, but to have those guys around you when you're doing it.
You know, I saw Dave loading in his gear, and he had basically brought his whole studio with him. And that was part of the thing too, because it took a long time to set up the way that he wanted to set up, which we really pushed the time limit down even less. It was, we definitely only have time for one take, but I'm so glad he did, because the signals and the sounds he got was great. But also the players, you're absolutely right, because I've played enough gigs with Justin Abedin that I'm totally comfortable with him, and he's comfortable with me, and we can be in the moment. And same with Sean O'Connor, that you know, it's quite different from being in a recording studio for a couple of reasons. One, which is, you know, you're kind of in confined spaces. This hall is a big hall. It's open, and you're hearing the room come back at you. But, you know, I mean, the other thing is that, you know, you're allowed to go wherever you want, and you sort of have the freedom of it. So, I don't know. It was a marvelous experience, and I'm so glad that we did it.
I've been twisting in my skin, and the chrysalis I'm in is holding back my heart. I've been locked out from the sky like an unborn butterfly, shut up in the dark. But I've got wings beneath my feet, gonna break me out of here. 'Cause I've decided I can hide this crazy part of me that kicks and screams and knows that dream of who I'm meant to be, who I'm meant to be. Until it is my own. So I keep wrestling this tune. I keep howling.
Play a track now. It's called Working on Faith, and this track says to me, David Leask, can you just tell us a little bit about what the track's all about?
I heard an interview with Shelley Wright, and she's a country artist, and she actually had just come out as a lesbian in the country world, and it was a really big thing. It was a tough thing for her to do, and she was being interviewed, and she was, you know, sort of struggling to be accepted in that world, I think. But she got asked how she was doing, and she says, I'm working on faith. And I wrote that idea down. There's another line in that song. I was down in Nashville and I had a writing poem with Bill DeLuigi, but I read a magazine with Annie DeFranco, and she had a line in a magazine that was, you know, I'm changing my shape. And I just kind of put the two of them together, and I had this writing poem with Bill DeLuigi, and we just sort of came at it. I mean, even musicians, songwriters, you have to have an incredible belief in yourself and belief in mystery to keep going. And it seemed to really resonate with me, and it was a great session with Bill DeLuigi. I was actually running late because I was doing a studio session, and I arrived, and I was writing that song with him while I was having my dinner. And it was 2 hours, that song is, I don't know, it's a special song on a record. I love playing it live, and I think people really get something from it. They can attach their own meaning.
I think that's what works with it, because I was thinking about it not in a musical context, but that you could take that into any part of your life and whatever you're doing.
Absolutely.
And it rings true to everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's an amazing track, so we'll listen to that right now.
Got a lot of troubles and a few good friends. Tell me the truth, I love me for who I am. But late at night when I'm not around, my worries are come sneaking out. They try to weigh me down. I'm working on faith, digging down deep, learning to fly by hitting my knees. Losing my doubts, changing my shape a little more each day. Well, I'm working on faith. I'm working on faith. I'm fighting hard to believe in the kind of man that I wanna be. And any minute he'll show up, I'm pretty sure he won't give up on me. So don't give up on me. Cause I'm working on faith, digging down deep, learning to fly back in my knees. Losing my doubts, changing my shape a little more each day. I'm working on faith. Yeah, I'm working on faith. Doesn't mean it's gone if you can't feel it. You know sometimes you gotta close your eyes, jump out, hold on, you're reaching. I'm working on faith, digging down deep, learning to fly by hitting my knees. Losing my doubts, changing my shape a little more each day. Working on faith, won't do me wrong. It's killing my blues right here in this song. Getting over myself, out on my way, a little more each day. Cause I'm working on faith. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm working on faith. Won't do me wrong. That humanist song, getting over myself, getting out of my way, changing my shape, working on faith, changing my shape. I'm working on, I'm working on, I'm working on faith.
As with previous albums, you've written tracks on it yourself, but you also do a lot of co-writing, and do you find that's an important part of who you are and what you actually do?
It's an important part of being creative for me, because it's a lonely road trying to do everything yourself. And I think that I heard it described as going treasure hunting together, and it's like the idea that you're both trying to find the treasure, but you have different skill sets. So, you know, someone might be a better sniffer or better eyesight or whatever. So you have this kernel of an idea, and you kind of follow the trail of that idea. And I think that it's like going hunting together. So I've always enjoyed the co-writing process. I've written, co-written with a lot of different people. And the process for me is very much an intuitive thing as to decide to what ideas to bring to the table with what co-writers. And that's, it's a really interesting process, because a lot of it's just the night before or the morning off, and I'll just really think about it, and then I'll present these ideas, and pretty much every time I've done that, we've always gotten something. And it's it's kind of that intuition of who am I writing with, even if it's someone I've never written with before. And I think that's always served me well. So I really enjoy it.
People from different genres as well that you are writing with, and I suppose their background brings something completely different every time you...
It's part of the excitement, and it's part of the learning process too, because, yeah, people have, like we were talking about, different influences, so you're kind of, you can sponge some of that, and before you know it, you'll be writing in a different groove or time signature, or, you know, it's a cool part of the co-writing thing.
Cool. Can you tell me a little bit about the song, The Good Fight?
Yeah, you know, The Good Fight was an idea. I think I had the title and I was down in Nashville and I woke up and I literally could hear the chorus in my head, and I was in the dark and didn't want to wake my wife up. So I scrambled over in the dark to my iPhone and I kind of sang the chorus idea, and then I really plugged away at that song. It's like the song possessed me, and I didn't finish it there. I finished it when I got back home to Canada. But yeah, it's this idea that, you know, if you believe in something enough and you're willing to fight for it, you know, that's a good fight. You know, it's a relationship song. There's so many relationship songs that are either about getting in a relationship or getting out of a relationship. This is a song about fighting for a relationship and being right in the thick of it. And so I feel it's a very gutsy song, and I think a lot of people can relate to it. I know when I play it live, people really get it.
There's a fire and beauty in your eyes when we kiss between the blame and the compromise. Go dance around the anger in the dark. I'm holding you like dynamite, waiting for the spark. We make love, we make pain, and stir it up again. Sometimes we have to go to war, fight the good fight. It's a love worth fighting for. There's a strength beneath your shoulders and your hands to keep carrying the wounds the best you can. If you peel off those fatigues around your heart, let me pull you closer. We can share the scars. We make love, we make pain, stir it up again. But if we're both in the battle, we're alive. You raise your voice, speak my sometimes we have to go to war, fight the good fight. It's a love worth fighting for. There is no victory, no defeat, no giving up. Just to keep the peace. I don't care if we're loving or it's me and you, and we're both fighting for the truth. 'Cause we may lie, make pain and stir it up again. But if we're both in the battle, we're alive. You raise your voice, I speak my mind. It takes courage in the trenches to survive. Every tear, sometimes we have to go to war, fight the good fight. It's a love worth fighting for.
River Road. Can you tell me a little bit about that one as well?
Yeah, River Road was the first time I'd written with Tom Mutes. And Tom It's a guy I'd never written with before. He's sort of big in the bluegrass world down there, and he's a great producer, a great songwriter, and he almost wasn't going to write with me because he was sick as a dog, and then he put it off, and then he says, okay, I'll do it. And I turned up at the session, and he literally had a scarf over his face, and he was having a terrible day, and I brought up this musical idea, and it was, you know, he heard something in it that just kind of pointed towards this river road, and it was a really good session, another really quick session. And, you know, as I look back at that song, I mean, you and I both grew up in border towns. Pretty much all these towns are centered around rivers. Rivers have such significance, and so it was a great sort of way to point towards finding your own peace, whatever that is, by taking your walk down River Road. And again, it's another one of the most popular songs on the record.
Just to talk a little bit about the sound, because like I say, you've got a very unique sound. It's your own sound. It is David Leask. How hard is it to get that and capture that on the album? And I suppose that's what you were trying to do.
You should ask Dave Vanderplug that question.
An integral part of having a team around you that know you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, and I know Dave well, and I've worked with him, you know, a lot of years, and, you know, I didn't have a microphone in front of my acoustic guitar, and that's the normal thing to do is to record with a mic so you pick up the sound of an acoustic guitar. So, but I have an acoustic guitar that has, you know, what's known as a double pickup system. There's a sound hole pickup and a pickup underneath the bridge of the guitar. So there's a little bit more flexibility in how you sculpt that sound. It's always how I've played, and it's always how I hear my sound. So it was very natural for me to hear the sound that way. I used a Bose system in the room so I could monitor the way that I always do my live gigs. So it's about being comfortable. I read a story a while ago about how Neil Young did his record with Daniel Lanois. And it was the same. He did his record with live speakers. Like, he was recording in a house with great big PA speakers that he could hear himself the way he would on stage. And I think that there's this tendency when you go in a studio, you put these headphones on, it's a very different scenario from when you're actually playing. I mean, I sing and play, you know, 100-120 gigs a year, and I never have headphones on. So it's almost an unnatural thing to do. So there's some sacrifice in maybe the quality of the tone, but it's the directness and how you treat that afterwards. For example, the microphones that were in the room pick up just the bleed from the room, so they're almost like the miking, the acoustic, and the acoustic come through the Bose. So, but it's a real interesting thing to do, because it's not consistent, because how hard you hit a chord makes that ring out in that hall at a different length of decay time. Yeah. So the mixing was really a challenge. And even though there was only, you know, two instruments and a voice, the other thing I did with my guitar is I actually put it through a Fender Twin Reverb amp in the cupboard. Justin's amp was in the kitchen. So we mic'd those. And so I had a little bit of grit on my guitar, my acoustic, coming through there. So we tried just to find the right blend of that. And that was kind of our own formula, if you like, for creating a cohesive sound on a record.
Interesting stuff.
Thank you.
So I want to talk about two tracks in particular that are on the album that I've heard you perform before and you've recorded before. On this album and the live album, it's a completely different feel to them, and mm-hmm. and just as good, if not better, the feel that you've got. To me, it's more like a jazzy feel. If I walked Photosynthesis to start with, how did you come up with the arrangement that you were wanting to do with that?
You know, in common with a number of tracks on this record, they come almost from a wood sharing process of playing with these guys in a live situation and just trying things. And Sean, you know, has joined me on these songs in a variety of different permutations, you know, but he's an incredible tenor sax player. So the Photosynthesis, if you listen to some of these diminished chords, there's some jazzy progression. So whereas the version on the Underneath record was more of a sort of rhythm and bluegrass, shall we say, this is definitely lean more jazz, and it really worked, you know, like it's just a different take on it. And same with All My Love. You know, it's the soprano seemed to be almost a replacement for the fiddle and the mandolin in terms of the sort of cheerfulness of it and presenting the idea of you're in love. You know, it's just, it seemed to sing out.
Yeah. For me, I mean, because I've heard it in different situations when you're live and you've played it on your own, but you've also played with the fiddle player and whatever. But
yeah.
Definitely with the saxophone, Photosynthesis has been described as a bit of an earworm on this record, just because it's got that really nice feel about it, but it's a full sound.
Well, that's the thing. It's just two of us, right? I mean, but, you know, it's this thing about just having players that know when to play and know when not to play, you know, and I think Sean and Justin, I think they have that because they're veteran players, so they're good listeners.
Yeah. Well, it says a lot for you that you're able to pick guys like that to complement your songs.
You know, I just, it's, again, it's another intuitive thing, and, you know, I've played with a lot of different musicians, and, you know, They're great guys who know me well, and I know them well, and so yeah, it all worked out.
We're going to play those two tracks right now, Photosynthesis and All My Love. Dark night we can hold on.
with all my faith, all my love, I wanna give to you. With all my love, it's yours to take. That every day starting in with you. Seeing all my love, all my love, all my love is true and it's all coming over you, you, you. Is hanging on to kiss. Well, all my heart is yours to thrill, 'cause you are the things I know I can't resist. I wanna be the moon in your sky. Yeah, the message that you find, the rolling on the tide, saying all my love. Love is true and it's all coming home to you, 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 oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
There's one huge track that is a big favourite of mine, David, Ancestor's Eyes, that has got an amazing story attached to it, and it's a co-write with your wife, Mary Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
Can you relate the story of Ancestor's Eyes to us?
Yeah, I mean, I basically came across a book by Frederick Pohl about an explorer called Prince Henry Sinclair, who was from the Orkney Islands. And he was also the envoy to the King of Norway. And this book basically talked about him sailing across from the Orkney Islands to Guysborough, Nova Scotia in 1398, which was 90 years before Columbus came to North America. And I was very taken with the story of this explorer, I guess, as an immigrant. I could relate to the travel. So I wrote a song called Prince Henry. It was co-written with Christy McGraw, and I sent it to a fellow by the name of Niven Sinclair back in the UK, and he phoned me a couple of weeks later and he says, "You've done a marvellous job capturing the story of Prince Henry, and great job, I'm very proud of what you've done." And he said, "By the way," he says, "your name's Lisk. There's an awful lot of Lisks up there in the Orkneys where Prince Henry came from. Have you ever researched your own ancestry?" I said, "No, I've never really taken the time to do that." So he says, "Well, I'll make a few phone calls. I'll see what I can find out." And I was perhaps dreading what he would find out. But anyway,
skeletons in the cupboard.
That's right. About a few weeks later, he sent me this long fax that pointed towards the idea that there was a fellow by the name of Thomas Lisk who looked likely to be almost the right-hand man to Prince Henry Sinclair and would have been on that voyage back in 1398. So in sort of writing the first song, I learned about my own ancestry, and he wrote in the last sentences of his facts, he said, there's a reason he wrote that song. He says, what is born in the bone is not lost in the blood. And I think that just sent tingles down my spine and inspired me to write a song called Ancestor's Eyes. And I brought in Mary Ellen to help with it too. And kind of another add-on interesting part to that is Mary Ellen at the time didn't realise that as a Beattie, her ancestors grew up or were from the Langham area, and she worked down in Dumfries. So she herself had her own sort of ancestral discovery a number of years later. So, I mean, we all have parts of us that we don't know, you know, why we do certain things and where we come from. So now I can call her a border reaver. But yeah, that's the story behind Ancestors.
That's amazing. Well, we're going to listen to that track right now.
Dusty photo with a black and white expression staring back at me. I knew his only grandson since he was my father. Who was this man to me? I took a good look at life through my ancestors' eyes.
Things that's cool about this project is that I shot video for every song. So to release this record, I've been releasing the videos online, so you can go and watch the performances, and that's been a fascinating process to go through, to let people see it as well. I mean, not everyone wants to look at me, so you can, you know, be a lot, you know, you can stream it and you can buy it on iTunes and all the rest of it. But that was another different process, to not try not to think about the cameras and just be inside the performance. So you can imagine, you know, me talking about being in a recording studio, it's a whole other different thing. But that's a different thing for me to do, and it's also it's a good representation of what I do live. So in terms of NMD out there that, you know, wants to know what I look like in concert and sound like in concert, this is what it would be like. So, you know, if you want me to come and play in your living room or in your concert hall, you can go and check it out online.
Yeah, no, it is an absolute complete representation. I can vouch for that. It's as a one man show, incredible what you can do just on your own. And what really amazes me is the loop pedal system that you have going, which is takes an awful lot of skill, and you make it look so easy. How do you come up with the arrangements that you're going to use, or is that just all off the cuff when you're performing as well?
Well, you try things and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't, but it's about taking risks, and again, it's about being in the moment, just like the recording thing. You know, sometimes when I'm playing shows, I'll just start playing something I've never played before and I'll make something up. And to me, I don't know where I'm going, and I'm looping on the fly, and then I'm singing stuff, or sometimes it'll be an instrumental, and then I'll get to the end of it and I'll stop and people will clap and I have no idea what I did, and then it's deleted and it's gone forever. And I think that if you can keep doing that in your life, it's that, I mean, if you just go and play the same arrangement the same way every night, I don't know, I just need something, the unpredictability. Plus my looper doesn't have an undo, so if I make a mistake, that mistake comes around in a loop and you really hear it. So if you got to be as sharp as you can. So yeah,
no, you manage that. You're very hard working. You mentioned you do at least 120, if not more. You teach as well, and you do co-write, so it, I mean, pretty much consumes your entire life.
You know, it's the way of an independent artist is you have to wear many different hats. I mean, you know about that. And, you know, it's, I believe it's a good thing to understand what it is that you do. It's, you know, it's definitely probably true if you don't focus on one thing, you're not going to get as far ahead. But for me, it's about having a rich experience and keeping everything authentic and the way that you want it to be. I joke with people when they say, how you doing? I say, I'm thriving in obscurity. And that's fine, you know, not many people know who I am, but as long as I have enough creative fuel to keep me going and I'm physically fit enough to keep going singing and playing, then I think that's a good life.
People can find you at davidlisk.com.
That's right.
And Twitter, you're tweeting as well.
Every now and again I do, Lisk Expected.
There you go. And like you say, you've got this album, which is called The Clark Hall Sessions, but as well as the CD itself, where you know, people can go to the website and the store and buy it from there. But definitely check out the videos as well, because that's something completely unique, that each song has that particular video and you can be in that moment as well. So
that's right. Yeah.
It's a great thing to do. I want to thank you for coming along and chatting a little bit about the album.
Thank you for having me, Stevie. It's always a pleasure.
And we'll do it again very soon, the next time the next one comes out.
Absolutely. All right.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
There's a ship out in the harbour, patient on that classy green. There's a last boat rowing slowly, carries her own.